have to confess to you that many times in my past, I tried to be smart. But at the end, I outsmarted myself and end up really, really dumb. I may be in a situation that I seem to be stuck. I cannot go forward, but neither can I go back. So I started to think, I can find a way out of this. I come up with my own plan. I come up with my own action plan. I thought it was really smart. So I follow up with the plan of my own making. But at the end, I got myself in deeper trouble, and I had to concede, wow, Benjamin, you really outsmarted yourself this time. You're really, really dumb. I told this story before, and allow me to say it again, for some of you might have forgotten or might not have heard it before. A few years back, I had to go down to 26th Street. I had to do ministry of mercy. But the night before, there was a horrific rainstorm in Chicago. And there were flash floods everywhere. Everywhere all over Chicago, with the streets and intersections were flooded and impassable. I knew that already. And so I already prepared. I left home 2 hours before the time that I had to be in 26th Street. Now, 2 hours is plenty of preparation, right? I mean, normally it takes 35 minutes to go down to 26th Street. So I left 2 hours ahead. I thought, okay, I'm prepared. But still, I was in big trouble. The entire 90, entire Kennedy was closed because there was flooding in Hubbard Tunnel. But I got on it already. So I was stuck in Kennedy, and instead of thinking, now I cannot go forward, now neither can I go back, now what do I do? And then I started thinking to myself, now I've been in Chicago for 35 years. I know Chicago. I know every street in Chicago. I can get off Kennedy. I can use side streets. I can use local. I mean, I can get off in Cicero. Cicero is pretty wide. It's a 3-lane street. I can use Cicero to go down to Eisenhower, and I can pick up from Eisenhower to go down to Dan Ryan. If Cicero is too congested, I can always use Elston. I can always use Clybourne. I can always use Elston to go down to Ashland. And Ashland is also a very wide street. I can easily go down to Eisenhower and pick up Dan Ryan. I have many options. So I got off Kennedy, thinking, man, I'm really smart this time. But you know what? There were traffic jams in every intersection. Because every intersection were flooded. Every single one of them. And what made me feel even more dumber is that when I got off after a while, I'm stuck in some intersections now, and I turn on the radio and I hear this report, Kennedy is now open. At the end, I got to where I need to go. But I thought, even if I had stayed on Kennedy, I would have gotten down to 26th Street even sooner. I thought I was smart. I thought I had a better plan. But in the end, I had to kick myself with regret. At the end, I had to think myself, I had to concede that this time I really outsmarted myself. This time I'm really, really stupid. Are you like me? Honestly, now. I don't mind making fun of myself. Anthony always asks me, hey, Pastor, why do you always use examples like that about yourself? Because you know why? Because you are all like me. You do the same dumb things I do. There are many times in your past when you were stuck and you had to wait. But then you started thinking, I'm smart. I know how to extricate myself. I know how to get myself out of this jam. I know how to get myself out of this difficulty. I can come up with a better plan. But at the end, you realize you outsmarted yourself again. And you end up just like me, really dumb. When we travel on our journey of faith, it is the same. Fear is a great enemy of faith. We found that out. We studied that in the 15th chapter of Genesis. And now we come to Genesis chapter 16. We find that waiting is the next enemy of our faith. Do you remember some time in your past when you had to wait? Remember that? Was that fun? When you first came to the United States, you didn't have a car right away, so you had to go everywhere on a bus. In January, waiting for a bus, is that fun? In Miami, maybe not too bad, but what about in Chicago? When I applied to college, there was a time, long time ago. I remember in the old days, decision letters from Ivy Leagues, they come in April 15. And we apply in September and October. 6 months of waiting. That waiting was no fun. What are you waiting for today? What are you waiting for today? It's an awful, awful difficult time, isn't it? Is your faith in God wavering because of this waiting that you find yourself in? If your faith is shaking, if your faith is wavering because you have to wait, you're not alone. Even the great men of faith, even the great women of faith, they falter in their journey because they just couldn't wait anymore. Because they thought they were smarter than God. Because they thought they can come up with a plan better than God. And so they got off the highway of faith, just as I did getting off Kennedy. They started to find alternative routes, just as I did getting off Kennedy to find an alternative. But in the end, they realized they were really dumb. They realized that if they had stayed on track, they would have been so much more blessed. When we come to the 16th chapter of Genesis, that's what we see. That's what we see in Abram's journey of faith. That's what we see in Sarai's journey of faith. Their waiting for God's promise was just too hard. God had promised them a son, but that was 10 years ago. Even in the last 10 years, God repeated that promise, but nothing happened. God had again and again assured them. I use the word relax. I think God would have used the same word with Abram. Relax, Abram. Don't fear. Don't fret. I can't be counted on. I won't fail you. But the waiting was just too intolerable. And this time it was Sarai who thought she was smarter. So don't think it's just men who fail in the Bible. This time it was Sarai who thought she had a better plan. And she got off the journey of faith and she went on her own way. But we see that it is not only Sarai who failed. You know, God is a great equalizer. There's no such thing as gender prejudice. When men fail, women fail too. When women fail, men fail too. Abram here bore an even greater responsibility. But let's look at verses 1 and 2. Let's see how Sarai failed in her faith first. Look at verse 1 and 2. Let's read that together again, please. Shall we together? Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go and sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." You see, this Hagar was a product of Abram's previous failures. He could not stand the pressure of drought in Canaan. He had taken Sarai down to Egypt. And the fiasco of their failure was not too far back in memory. Pharaoh had deported Sarai and Abram out of Egypt. But Abram had acquired much wealth in Egypt. Genesis 12 tells us that including slaves, maidservants and men servants, and among the slaves that Abram got was this woman Hagar. Now in the eyes of the world, that was a great fortune, isn't it? But we will see in chapter 16, when we fail to trust in God, when we fail to obey God, God will forgive. God is gracious and slow to anger. God will forgive. But there is always a price to pay for our disobedience. There is always consequences for our disobedience. And this Hagar, whom Abram acquired in Egypt, will prove to be a big price Abram had to pay for his disobedience in Egypt. And here in verses 1 and 2, Sarai is saying to Abram, "I cannot have children, and it is all God's fault, since it is the Lord God who has kept me from having children." His plan of blessing us with a son sounds so wonderful. But those are all fancy words. Those are all empty words. Where's the son? Where's the son that God promised? So God's plan obviously is not working, and it is time I take matters into my own hand. Does that sound familiar? God's plan is not working. It is time I take my own hand for me to come up with a better plan. And here's my maidservant, Hagar. You take her to be your concubine. You sleep with her. You have a son with her. Perhaps I can have a family through her. Sarai is saying, when Hagar bore you a son, that son will be considered as mine. Now, is that a great plan or what? From our perspective, that was a great plan. From our perspective, that was indeed a better plan than God's. There are at least three reasons why I say, from a human perspective, they are good reasons. There are three reasons why they say that seems to be a better plan than God's. Number one, that was a perfectly legitimate thing to do in that time and in that culture. It was perfectly legitimate, perfectly legal. Archaeologists had dug up plenty of ancient artifacts, ancient objects. They found the code of Hammurabi. Remember freshman high school, world history? The first lessons, the code of Hammurabi. Remember those Nusi tablets? They come up with marriage contracts among those things that were dug up. The marriage contracts in those days specify that if a wife failed to produce a son, it is perfectly legal, perfectly legitimate for the husband to take another wife for the purpose of producing an heir. It was a very oriental thing to do. You know, we Chinese can understand that very well because we Chinese do exactly the same thing. Why do you think that you hear so many of your uncles, cousins of your father or your grandfather, they will tell you, well, it's the same father but different mother. We Chinese do exactly the same thing. So Sarai's plan indeed seems to be a better plan than God's. There's a second reason why it seems to be a better plan. Because Sarai can come up looking very, very magnanimous. Sarai can come out of this plan looking very, very selfless, very generous. After all, she is giving up certain degree of honor. She is giving up certain degree of privilege. Sarai is taking a great risk by doing this. She was willing to sacrifice her stature. She was willing to sacrifice her position. She might even lose Abram's affection. After all, it was Sarai who came up with this plan. It was Sarai who says to Abram to take wife number two. So Sarai's plan seems to be a better plan than God's because it shows Sarai to be a great woman of faith from her perspective, from her point of view, of course. There's a third reason why Sarai's plan seems to be better, because she thinks God's plan is subject to interpretation. Have you heard of that phrase before? How do we interpret the Bible? It is subject to interpretation. She's thinking to herself, yes, God did promise you a son, Abram. But did God ever specify that that son is going to come from me? I don't think so. Unless I miss reading chapter 12 to 16. Up to this point in Genesis 16, God never said, the son I promise you will come from Sarai. Up to this point, God only promised Abram will have a son. But who will be the mother? Up to this point, God never said that. God never said Sarai will be the mother until the next chapter, 17, verse 16. So what Sarai did does not seem to be a failure of faith. Sarai just thought that I can outsmart God. I can interpret God's promise differently. Sarai just thought she's got a better plan than God's. But did Sarai really have a better plan than God's? Just like us. Just like us when we think we are smarter than God. Just like us when we think we have a better plan. Sarai reaped the curse of her folly. We will see that in a few minutes. But what about Abram? Was he entirely innocent of this failure of faith? I don't think so. Not at all. Not only was he not innocent, he actually bore the greater part of the responsibility. Where did he fail? Where was Abram's culpability? His failure was that he failed in leadership. He seemed so passive. And we thought it was all Sarai's fault. But God never excuses us from guilt simply because we are ignorant. God never excuses us from guilt simply because we are passive. God never excuses us from guilt simply because we are only following. God never excuses us simply because we just follow others in doing stupid things. I think sooner or later we all, each and every one of us, will have this experience. We are driving in Illinois. By the way, I just read that Illinois raised the speeding limit to 70. Yeah. Indiana already in 70, long time ago. Even Ohio is 70. Ohio Turnpike. And finally, Illinois follow. Okay, you're driving back down to Springfield or driving down to to Champaign. I guarantee you, they are cops. I see so many of them every time. You think 70. You're going to 76 now. And the cop pull you over. Well, you say to the cop, you say, officer, everybody else is going 76 miles an hour. I'm just following traffic. I'm just flowing along traffic. Do you know how many times a cop have heard that explanation? What's the best thing for you to do? Best thing for you or for me to do is, officer, I am guilty. I throw myself at your mercy. The best thing we can do is, yes, officer, I have no excuse. I am guilty. Please be merciful. God never excuses us from guilt just because we are ignorant, just because we are following others. What did Adam say to God after he disobeyed God in Genesis chapter 3? Adam threw the blame back at God. And Adam threw the blame back at Eve. Verse 11 in chapter 3, Adam said to God, you know, that woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it. Adam was talking back to God. Adam is saying, God, it's all your fault. You gave me the woman. It is a woman's fault. She gave me the fruit. I was just following her. I was just flowing with the traffic. Did God excuse Adam's guilt? We all know God did not. So here in Genesis chapter 16, Abram seemed so innocent. He was so laid back. He was so passive. At the end of verse 2, look at the end of verse 2. Abram simply agreed to what Sarai said. Look at verse 6. Now this is after Sarai realized her plan backfired. This is after Sarai realized her plan turned sour. She realized how stupid her plans was. And then she started complaining to Abram. And Abram said to her, your servant is in your hand. Abram is saying, my hand is off. I'm not responsible. This woman, Hagar, is in your hand. Do with her whatever you think best. Abram was still so passive, seemed so innocent. But Abram was just as guilty of this folly, and maybe even more guilty, because Abram should have known better. Abram should have been more mature in spirituality. Abram should have taken leadership as he takes his wife's hand, as he leads her in this journey of faith. After all, their journey of faith will travel together. After all, it was Abram whom God had revealed himself. It was to Abram whom God had personally appeared. And yet, he just followed along with this plan of folly. He just flowed with traffic. And what a disaster of a plan. Every time we think we have better plans, it turned out to be disaster. Hagar did become pregnant. Now she was a totally changed person. She was a lowly, a powerless slave with no status before, and now she is a favored one. Verse 4 tells us that she began to despise her mistress. Sarai now realized how stupid she has been. Sarai now realized, after all, her plan was really dumb, but it was too late. Her selflessness has backfired. Her generosity, her magnanimity was too high a price she has to pay, but it was too late. Just like me, being stuck in the Kennedy, I get off the Kennedy, I'm on Ashland now, and it was too late to get back on Kennedy. What can Sarai do? What did she do? She complained. She complained to herself with accusation. Look at verse 5. Look at verse 5. Let's read that together since we have a few minutes today. Verse 5 together, please. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." Isn't it typical? Isn't it typical in the family? Isn't it typical in the marriage? When something's go wrong, when there is discord, excuse me, when there is hurt, when there is perceived injustice, whose fault is it? When there is fight, whose fault is it? It is always the other person's fault. It is never, never my own fault. And that's exactly what Sarai is saying to Abram. He's saying, "Oh man, it's all your fault. You are responsible for the wrong that I'm suffering. I am the selfless one. I am the generous one. I am the good guy here. I put my servant in your arm. But look at the suffering that I get in return." She also pleaded with God. She called on God to judge between Abram and herself. She's saying to God, "I'm the innocent one here." Isn't it typical? When there's fight in the marriage, when there's fight in the family, we pray. The husband pray, the wife pray. Always praying to God, "God, I'm the innocent one here. You come and find my husband guilty." Can you hear the bitterness in those words? Can you hear the acidity in those words? Can you hear the accusation? It's all over this verse in verse 5. Do you see any love? Do you see any affection? Do you see any kindness? No wonder Abram answered Sarai, "Your servant is in your hand. Do whatever you think best." You know what Abram is saying to Sarai? Abram is saying, "Oh woman, I can't stand it anymore." Abram is saying to Sarai, "Oh woman, I can't take your bitter, acidic accusation anymore. Stop it. I don't want to hear it anymore. Do with this woman whatever you think best. Kick her out of the house if you want, if only you would just zip her up." That's what Abram is saying. Do whatever you think best. Don't bother me anymore. When we think we have a better plan than God's, when we think it all depends on myself, on ourselves, to realize God's promise, it always brings disaster. It always brings disaster. There's always consequences to pay when we think we can outsmart God. The price Abram and Sarai had to pay was, number one, domestic discord. They were old. Sarai was 75 years old. Abram was 85 years old. I mean, that is a time in a marriage. That's the time in our life when old husband and old wives hold their hands together and sit in the porch and watch the beautiful sunset together. But instead, they were fighting like dogs and cats. That was the first price that they had to pay for coming up with a better plan. They had a second price they had to pay, and that is the price of being cruel and being inhumane. Sarai got Abram's permission to do whatever she thinks best. And what do you think Sarai did? Of course, she did what every natural human being would do. She mistreated Hagar and she fled from her. She must have done something to make this woman, Hagar, run from her. Now, Sarai did not personally, directly send her into the desert. But she certainly was guilty of being accessory to manslaughter and womanslaughter. Not only one count, but two counts. Remember, she was pregnant with Ishmael. Hagar fled into the desert with no idea where to go. She just wanted to leave. Because we know that she doesn't know where she wants to go, because the angel of the Lord found her near a spring in the desert. And the angel asked her, "Where did you come from? And where are you going?" Hagar could only answer, look at verse 8, "I am running away from my mistress Sarai." That's all she can answer. She answered the first question, but she cannot answer the second question, because she had no idea where she was running to. She had no idea where she can find refuge. All she knew was that she had to run away. Now, okay, she was near a spring in the desert. At least she can find some water. But how long can you think a woman in her condition lasts in the desert? If she perish, which is very highly probable, Sarai and Abram would be guilty not only of failure in faith, they will be guilty of manslaughter and womanslaughter. Not only one count, but two counts. Abram and Sarai had to pay a very high price for thinking that they can come up with a better plan than God. There's a third price they had to pay. There's a price not only they had to pay, but their descendants had to pay, all the way up to our present time. And for generations and generations to come, their descendants will still be paying this price. God was gracious to Hagar. Look at verse 9. "Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.'" Look at verse 10. "The angel added, 'I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count.'" That's a wonderful, wonderful blessing from God, isn't it? But that's not all God had to say to Hagar. Now I'm going to ask you to read 11 and 12 with me. Let's read 11 and 12 together, please. Shall we together? "The angel of the Lord also said to her, 'You are now with child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord had heard of your misery.'" Now pay attention to verse 12. "He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." Now, if you read a different version, especially NASB, at the very last, you will read that his hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of his brothers. That's a possible translation of the Hebrew. But I think it is a better reading, better translation. We take it as the NIV does it. He will live in hostility with all his brothers. How would you like to be Hagar? I mean, how would you like to have a son like that? And how would you like to receive a blessing from God like that? At first, I think you must feel wonderful. God will increase my descendants, and they will be as too numerous to count. Wow, that's great, isn't it? Why do we Chinese prefer sons than daughters? Well, not us, but still, traditionally, Chinese do say sons are better than daughters, because we want our names to live on and on and on and on. We don't want our name to end. See, when you don't have sons, you know, your daughter marry away and the name will be changed. You want your name to go on and on. Isn't that wonderful? God is saying to Hagar, you're going to have so many descendants who will bear your name and on and on. But look closely to what God had to say about this son. God said the hand of this son will be against everyone's, and everyone else's hand will be against him, and he will live in hostility with all his brothers. And these words of the Lord about this son Ishmael will be fulfilled. I'm going to ask you to turn to chapter 26. If you would turn to chapter 26, Genesis 26, verse 18. Since we have a few minutes, let's read that. Chapter 25, verse 18. Shall we? Okay, I'll give you a second. Or two. Or three. Genesis 25, 18. Let's read that together, please. His descendants settled in the area near Havilah to Shur, near the border of Egypt, as you go toward Asher, and they live in hostility toward all their brothers. This little passage in chapter 26 is a description of the descendants of Ishmael. And again, this phrase, they live in hostility against all his brothers. How would you like to have a son like Ishmael? How would you like to have grandchildren and great-grandchildren and all the descendants just like that? God fulfilled his promise to Ishmael that this guy is going to be a behavioral disorder kid. Every day, the principal of the son school calls you. Mrs. So-and-so, you need to come to school. We need to have a talk. We need to have a parent conference. Your son has violent tendency. He's fighting everybody in school. He's bullying every girl in school. And everyone in school has had enough of him. Every day he's fighting in the playground, in the classroom. Just today we had to summon the cops to restrain him with handcuffs because he's beating his kindergarten teacher with a baseball bat. We need to come and sign some papers, Mr. So-and-so, to put him in special programs. We need to put him in special ed. The psychiatrist have already examined him. He diagnosed his behavior disorder. How would you like to have an Ishmael for a son? That's what Ishmael was. From the time he was in nursery school, he was beating up everyone else in the playpen. And everyone else is ganging up on him to get him back. Not only was Ishmael like that, his descendants were like that. And here's the saddest of all. Today's Arabs claim to be descendants of Ishmael. And today Jews and Arabs all claim Abram as their ancestor. They are Semitic people. They all claim Abraham as their father. And you tell me, has there ever been peace among even the different tribes, different nations of the Arabs? Has there been peace between Arabs and Jews? Even non-Semitic people, Europeans and Americans, have there been peace between Europeans and Americans with Arab nations? Just as the angels of the Lord said to Hagar, his hand will be against everyone and everyone's hands will be against him and he will live in hostility with all his brothers. This is a very, very high price to pay for Abram and for Sarai, all because waiting is too hard for them. And they thought they have a better plan than God. It is true for them. It is true for us today. Fear is a great enemy of faith. Waiting is the next great enemy of faith. When we find ourselves stuck in a situation with nowhere to go, when we find ourselves stuck waiting with no end in sight, we begin to think to ourselves, I can outsmart God. I have a better plan for my life than God does. I can take matters into my own hands. Besides, sure, God promised me this and God promised me that, but God needs my help to fulfill his promise. Sure, God promised me this and God promised me that, but it really depends on me to fulfill what is best for me, because I have a better plan for myself than God does. Dear people, it always brings disaster. It always brings disaster. There's always a price to pay. There's always a price to pay when we get off our journey of faith. There's always a price to pay when we think we can come up with a better alternative, when we think we can have a better plan for ourselves than God does. There is always consequences. At the end, we will kick ourselves with regret and have to concede, boy, that was stupid of me. Why didn't I stay on course? Why didn't I stay on track? Why did I not stay on track while walking with the Lord? It took Abram and Sarai 25 years for them to receive God's promise in their hands. 25 years is a long time. 5 years may even be a short time, because for others, God may want them to wait even longer. What are you waiting for? It's an awful, awful, difficult time, isn't it? And please don't think, please don't ever think you and I can come up with a better plan for ourselves than God does. And please don't ever think that God needs our help to fulfill His promise to us. Keep staying on track while you keep your hands in the Lord's hand. And as you and the Lord, and as I and the Lord travel together on this journey of faith. Let's all stand together and sing a closing hymns together. It's an old hymn, but I like to sing old hymns. They're oldies but goodies.